Hello and welcome to NC State's Audio Abstract. I'm your host, Tracy Peake. The rare Titan arum is also known as the corpse flower because it can smell like rotting flesh. Brandon Huber, a horticultural graduate student here at State, received a corm, or a dormant stem, from a Titan arum back in 2007 and brought it with him when he came to NC State. The plant, which Brandon has named Remus Lupin in honor of its NC State Wolfpack connection, first bloomed in 2016, and it looks like it may be getting ready to bloom again by August 1st of this year. We're going to speak with Brandon today about all things corpse flower. Welcome, Brandon.
Hi, Tracy. Thanks for having me here today.
Tell me about the corpse flower. What is this thing, and where do they normally grow?
So the corpse flower is a member of the aroid family, or the Araceae family. And if we think common plants in the aroid family, we can think of peace lilies, or the spatophyllum, calla lilies, or anthuriums. A lot of these aroid plants are common houseplants. However, this one in particular is the world's largest inflorescence, known for its flowering size, anywhere from 4 to the world record being 12 foot tall.
So you would not actually have this as a houseplant, most likely.
No, not typically, because it relies on very warm, humid conditions. And, you know, consistently warm, humid conditions is critical to its success.
Okay. Where does this plant grow in the wild?
So the Amorphophallus titanum is found in Indonesia. And the Amorphophallus genera is very diverse, having species from across much of Asia. However, this one tends to be the more very tropical region.
And apparently it does not bloom very often. Like with lilies, you know, the flowers we were sort of comparing it to that we would be familiar with here, they bloom annually. How often does this plant bloom?
Yeah, so the first bloom from typically these plants are grown from seed as they don't offset or produce pups. They're very solitary in nature. They do produce seed when they flower, and lots of seed, but typically a seedling will take 7 to even 15 years for the first flower to even be, you know, for the first flower to occur.
Okay, and then thereafter, does it bloom yearly, or does it wait? What's the dormant
period?
Right,
so I think the lower limit is usually 3 years for a rebloom, but typically it's more like 3 to 7, they would say, on average. The interesting thing is a lot of times, even in nature, these plants will flower, produce seed, and then die after they're flowering. So it's, you know, after pollination that they tend to spend all their energy on flowering and fruiting that they actually have no energy left to regenerate and continue as a plant continue its cycle. But it produces all that seed and leaves those behind.
How long, when they do bloom, how long does that bloom typically last?
Yeah, the bloom only lasts 2 to 3 days typically,
wow,
depending on the conditions. You know, the blooming period, well, the bloom development is usually over a 2-month span, where it grows very rapidly as it approaches its bloom time.
Why do these plants smell so terribly?
So they're very interesting, and they unlike a typical flower, they're actually pollinated by flies, carrion beetles, which is very unusual.
Right. So things that would be drawn to like a smell of decay, I guess. Right.
Right. And they also produce heat. They fall into this rare group of plants that are thermogenic, meaning they can actually produce heat, and when they flower, to help draw in these pollinators to kind of simulate this, like,
decaying,
you know, dead
corpse
animal.
Ew.
Or something. Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yep. So we actually took thermal images last time it bloomed, and you could see it heating up around the flower itself, where the receptive portion of the flower is, where it wants to be pollinated. That's where it was glowing, you know, 15 degrees warmer than the surface around it.
If you're close to the plant, would you be able to maybe detect a change in temperature if you got a little closer to it?
Yeah, if you actually touched it, you would probably feel some warmth, especially down in the plant is categorized by this giant spadix, which is a spike that sticks up, and the spathe is this outer kind of hooded structure that's kind of creates this, like, you know, Jack in the Pulpit like flower,
okay,
which, you know, being in the same family, it's categorized by that spathe and spadix. But down in the bottom of the spadix, there is where the pollen is dropped, and also the receptive portion that would produce seeds, and that's where the heat is released. So if you were to reach down in there, you would probably sense some heat
warmer
from there.
That's really amazing. How did you come by, I mean, a bulb, a corm? What do we call these little seedlings?
Yeah, so it's a corm. They're basically their dormancy. Being a tropical plant, in a tropical climate, this plant kind of just takes little rests. Maybe it's a dry season that, you know, they go dormant for a little bit, or they just rest to rejuvenate their foliage. But this corm serves as a storage unit to help them get through times when they're taking a rest, or especially when they're flowering. So this corm needs to develop over time to get large enough to support a flower, because the flower is basically eating up a lot of this stored energy and not producing much to the plant. So we need to, in order for the plant to sustain itself through its reproductive stage, it basically develops into this massive tuber. You know, in our case, our tuber weighs 120 pounds.
Oh, great.
And it's just this massive storage unit to help it get through flowering and then fruiting. And even with that flowering, fruiting, some plants, like I mentioned prior, they actually die after that process because they've eaten up all that energy, even as big of a tuber as they can develop.
So when you got this thing, I'm sure it did not weigh 120 pounds. Somebody did not say, hey, Brandon, here, have this seed. It weighs 120
right.
pounds. Bring a hand truck.
Yeah, it was this just like little one-pound bulb. It was maybe not even a pound, a small little bulb. And from there that it kind of grew, it was tripling and quadrupling its mass per growing cycle. And it was just, you know, a growing cycle for Amorphophallus titanum can be upwards of to 2 years. So this is, you know, if we think about a plant growing for 2 years straight, that's a lot of potential for the tuber, the corm, to get a lot larger.
A lot larger.
Yeah.
So when it was growing like this, as the bulb or whatever, the corm, got bigger and bigger and bigger, was it sending up shoots during this time
right.
as well? How does that, what yeah. does that look like?
So, yeah, they're very strange, and they send up one leaf. They send up this giant compound leaf. So this looks like a tree, you know, like a big tree trunk coming up out of the ground, and has these really symmetrical leaflets that form and create this this tree-like plant. And as the bulb gets bigger and bigger, this leaf canopy gets larger. But in a growing cycle, it'll only send up one leaf. So you have this one leaf come up, and it'll just sit there and just be green for up to 2 years as it's just photosynthesizing and generating energy to build that tuber up larger. And then out of nowhere, the tuber, the petiole will start to shrink, turn yellow, and it'll just fall over. And it'll actually go dormant, and it'll rest for a month or two, and sometimes even more, a couple months. And when it's ready to grow again, it will. It'll send up again just another leaf. So it'll do this for about, you know, 10, you know, like I said, 7 to 15 years until finally it has enough energy to flower. In that occurrence, instead of sending a leaf up, it sends a flower up instead. Up until that shoot comes up about a foot, it's very hard to tell if it's a flower or if it's yet another leaf.
Okay, yeah,
because
I was going to ask.
So it's kind of mysterious.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how can you predict? Because you could look at it, and when we were talking about this, you were saying, well, you know, it looks like it may bloom sort of the first weekend in August. Well, that's a pretty specific time frame for a flower to bloom, and I was wondering how you could tell, like how you know.
Yeah, so based on its bloom record last time, I have very detailed records, like daily, in some cases, especially at the later stages, of how quick it's grown per day and how that relates to the final opening, bloom time. And also I've looked at, and last time it bloomed in 2016, I based these estimates from other growers' flower records, and I was able to predict it pretty accurately. And now that I have data from this same plant from 2016, I feel even more confident that we're able to pinpoint it even better.
once you see that it's not just putting up a leaf this time, that it's putting up something different.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So we have kind of like I kind of plot it out, and I plot it out against last time's growth curve. And just to give you an example, these plants are growing incredibly fast when they are blooming. Right now, we're growing at 5 inches a day.
Wow.
Yeah. So every 24 hours, it's gaining another 5 inches. And this is kind of the peak growth rate that we'll see out of this thing. And that helps me, you know, when that growth starts to taper off, we know that it's getting ready to open. And then, you know, it'll sit about 1 or 2 days and not grow anymore. And then we know it's about to open. The flower will darken and color up and it'll open up.
It'll open up. Okay. So how tall is little Remus lupin now?
Stands at 55 inches. Well, 55 inches tall today.
Okay. So almost 5 feet.
Yeah.
All right. Wow. How many of these Titan arum are in greenhouses across the U.S.? Do you know, or can you ballpark that? Are there a lot of people who have these flowers, or are they pretty rare?
They're pretty rare. They're starting to be around a lot more. I would say that when lupin bloomed last time, it was in the upper 200s, I recall, as far as the documented bloom in a conservatory, in cultivation. I feel that, you know, for a long time, these plants were very unknown and challenging to grow. But as more and more people grew them and learned and even killed some, you know, and learned what not to do in growing these, that they were able to kind of perfect and really know how to grow these things well and to get so that people can succeed in growing them.
So what is the most challenging thing about growing one of these?
I would say, you know, I think they are heavy feeders, meaning that they do like a lot of fertilizer. So I say, for one thing, you really need to encourage that bulb growth by feeding them well. We typically use a slow-release fertilizer, like a granular fertilizer, in addition to a liquid feed. And this really helps to build that bulb. I see some, you know, with some Amorphophallus, you know, if they're not developing their bulb larger each season, it's because maybe they were a little starved for nutrients, or it could be light. I would say that's the most stressful time in growing them, is during their dormancy period. You know, when that bulb is going in and out of a sleeping period, there's a very fine line of moisture that needs to be added or provided to the plant to prevent it from rotting. And, you know, for us, we actually take the tuber out of the pot where we can get it some airflow and are very careful in the amount of water we provide it during the dormancy.
So how bad does it smell? Like, what does it smell like? You've been up close and personal. I have not.
Yeah, so, you know, as much as they smell like roadkill, or they say they smell like roadkill, which is kind of true, but the flower, you know, knowing that it's coming from this plant, kind of, you know, it's not as bad to me. I feel that some people find it to be just, you know, nauseating. However, maybe because I'm used to these flowers blooming and knowing that it's a flower, I'm kind of less, I guess, repulsed by it, because it's not a dead animal. It's a flower. And I'd say that the peak flowering smell is about 24 hours.
Okay.
And actually in our greenhouse last time, with the fans running, it really wasn't that bad. You had to get up close to it and really smell it to really pick up that strong smell or be downwind from it.
Well, what is the coolest thing about the corpse flower?
Yeah, I would have to say the growth rate. I mean, when these plants are either doing nothing or they're doing a lot. You know, they're always doing a lot in growing and, you know, photosynthesizing, but, you know, when they're growing and developing these flowers, when you're just consistently logging 3, 4, 5, 6 inches a day growth, it's incredible. I mean, you can, you know, in a time lapse, it creates a really nice time lapse video. Just you can almost watch the thing develop. And they're just another. And so the growth rate is definitely one. And another thing that always amazes me with this plant is its ability to attract people. And even non-horticultural people. And, you know, I remember in 2016, many people saying that, and they were non-plant people, and they said, you know, we crossed this off for our bucket list. We've always wanted to see this our whole life, you know, and I think that that's, you know, it's a way of, you know, bringing people together and bringing people by the thousands together or in here to see this plant. And people would travel from pretty far distances just to see it. And it's really incredible.
That's great. Yeah, I'm definitely going to make a point to stop by and take a whiff for myself when it blooms this go round. Well, thank you so much for being here, Brandon.
Yeah, no problem. It's been a pleasure.
We've been speaking with Brandon Huber, a horticultural graduate student here at NC State. Thanks for listening to Audio Abstract. I'm Tracy Peake.